The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I was way impressed. Chuck Oliver Show, hour two on a Wednesday, and I was talking a couple of weeks back. Really, I was talking about Mac Brown, but against that backdrop, I had kind of done a flyover of NC State, and I said, so you bring in a big transfer quarterback, and then for four games, he's not the quarterback, and then the new guy says, yeah, I'm leaving, and you look up, and your leading rushers are the benched quarterback and a wide receiver, and you have to go. Going back to the previous quarterback is never an easy, against the backdrop of all that stuff, NC State puts together the season that, like, NC State fans look around and go, really, have we ever had this season before? You have. But consistently and against that backdrop and to get on a five-game heater to close out the season, I thought it was a tremendous job from the coaching staff and everybody there holding that thing together. I want to welcome on right now from On Three. He's there covering NC State for the Wolfpacker. It's Ethan McDowell. Ethan, welcome. How you doing?
Hey, thank you for having me on. Doing well.
All right, well, let's talk about the new season, because there's another transfer quarterback coming in, former Coastal star Grayson McCall. He's the latest, and it's just sort of a normal thing now. How's he coming along in their offensive scheme?
I mean, everything I've heard is positive. I mean, you bring in someone who, three-time Sun Belt Player of the Year, over 10,000 career passing yards, and just a wealth of experience. And I think he's going to fit their offensive scheme really well, man. I mean, they've brought in so much talent on that side of the ball over the past year, and to, you know, compliment, you know, Kevin Concepcion, their star slot receiver, who, you know, you mentioned he was third on the team and or second on the team even in rushing last year. So he's a dynamic player, and then they're complimented him with, you know, skill position players all around him. And then you have Grayson McCall, who, you know, he's really just going to have to come in and kind of play like point guard almost. He's just going to have to distribute the ball, get the ball reliably to these playmakers. And I think he introduces a high floor at the quarterback position for NC State that is going to really elevate their offense past what we've seen from them over the past couple of years.
All right, well, this is kind of weird. A lot of programs, you can have depth as a, you know, we're previewing the season and I'm looking at the offensive line. Oh, they have good depth. And I look and, like, it's a transfer from TCU and one from Tulsa and one from Arizona State. NC State has returning starters from NC State. Talk about what the offensive line, because salty lines of scrimmage is sort of a key for Dave Doran. And it's been a minute since their offensive line has been road grading people.
Yeah, so they're bringing back four starters along the line. And the fifth starter, their center, Dylan McMahon, he's off to the NFL. And they brought in former Notre Dame center Zeke Correll, who, you know, three-year starter at Notre Dame, of all places, too. So there's a lot of talent on that unit. It's also Garrett Tujay's second year coaching that unit. So looking forward to seeing what they've got up there. Anthony Belton, their left tackle, is a NFL prospect, in my opinion, and just got to see if he can take the leap into his you know, redshirt senior year after coming back. And, you know, they shuffled around pieces last year. They were starting a redshirt freshman at a right tackle for the second part of the year after he was at points playing like a blocking tight end role almost. And so he's now got a full season. He's put on a little more weight. He's more physically ready to be playing that right tackle spot, and he's someone the staff is really high on, really excited about, someone who made a ton of strides last year. And in the interior, it's going to be one of the more interesting battles during camp. You have, you know, Tim McKay is a veteran at right guard. I think he will hold down that starting job, and he started the season at tackle and shifted in after really never playing guard that consistently. So him having a full season to get used to that role, and then, you know, best man wins at left guard, I think it could be a very, very interesting and underrated spring practice, fall camp battle for the Wolfpack there. But, you know, the continuity is something to be excited about if you're a Wolfpack fan.
There's another way to have continuity. It's when you bring in a quarterback and his coordinator, and you're thinking, all right, well, this is going to work just perfectly. Talk about Robert and I now moving on, working with Grayson McCall, and maybe how that mesh is going to be, because, I mean, he's an accomplished OC.
Yeah, absolutely, right? He has that it's not really an air raid offense through and through, but it has those air raid principles, and, you know, it's a big part of it. And, you know, when Grayson McCall was playing with Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina, it was a little bit of an unorthodox, unusual offense there. And, you know, I think he's going to be joining another offense that's going to go, they're going to tailor it to his strengths. Like Anai, he doesn't recruit players to his system. He structures his system around his players. I thought you saw that a lot with how they used Kevin Concepcion last year, moved them around, you know, into the backfield. They were getting them going just on jet sweeps and pop passes and stuff like that. Just that his offense is always evolving. So in terms of like what the offense is really going to look like, I don't think we're really going to know until we see them on the field, because even last year it changed so consistently over the course of the season to mold into what his player's strengths were. And so it's going to be interesting to see, but everything he's shown in the year he's been at NC State is he will be able to maximize Grayson Cole's strengths and hopefully max some of his weaknesses.
Wrapping up with Ethan McDowell, is our truest reporter for NC State from the Wolfpacker. It's an on-3 thing. All right, so let's just talk overall, because there is returning talent wide receiver. There's also a big giant Dakari Collins coming in. There's a Wake Forest transfer. I mean, like everybody else, they're throwing in transfer receivers. Talk about just the overall talent level, because I think that the explosiveness of this offense, like, it could be a night and day sort of thing from last year at times.
Oh, I completely agree, man. I mean, you look at it, you bring in Wesley Grimes. On3 had him as a top 50 recruit coming out of high school, the number 4 wide receiver in the country. He spent a couple years at Wake Forest, put up some solid numbers there, and he's going to add a like reliable, you know, jump ball threat, red zone guy to NC State's offense that they were missing. And you pair him with Noah Rogers, who was a former 5-star recruit from right up the road. NC State finished 2nd in his recruitment the first time around. He spends a year at Ohio State, and now he's coming back home. He's going to be a deep threat that NC State missed last year. Outside of Kevin Concepcion, they didn't have a ton of deep threats there. And then you add in Justin Jolie, who, you know, dynamic 6'4 tight end, can do a little bit of everything. And we talked about Robert and I's offense. That's exactly the type of player he needs to really take his offense to another level. Before he came to NC State, he had back-to-back All-ACC first-team tight ends at UVA and Syracuse. And, you know, Jolie, who was at UConn the previous year, had 56 receptions for 578 yards and a couple of touchdowns. So very excited about what that passing offense could look like.
Flip it around to defense, because I remember last year going into the season, I asked a buddy of mine, this is on the air, I was like, who's the best player on the team? He's like, Peyton Wilson. I was like, all right, so you got an upperclassman, rugged linebacker who's a really good tackler. I was like, I need a different answer for who's the best player on the team, but he's like, no, it's Peyton Wilson. He's a stud. He was a monster. How do you replace him?
I mean, the short answer is you can't. I mean, he was that good, right? It's going to be a committee thing. You're not going to have the sideline-to-sideline you know, ability that Peyton Wilson really presented, the consistency he brought to the defense, because, you know, I mean, I think he masked other issues sometimes in that defense throughout the season because he was that good. So you know, they bring in Cam Riley, a transfer from Auburn. He'll be here in the summer. He's someone that'll compete for the starting job at their will linebacker spot. But then you have Sean Brown, one of the more interesting storylines of the offseason, who moved positions from safety to linebacker this season. And, you know, he's done it. He's played that role before. Peyton Wilson missed a series against Clemson, the final series of the game. And Sean Brown slid down to his will linebacker spot. And in one series, he recorded 5 tackles. So that's where he's practicing right now in the spring. We'll see how he, if he sticks there, how that competition works out with Cam Riley once he's here in the summer. But it's going to be a committee approach. I bet they're both going to play a lot. They have talented linebackers as well. Kamal Bonner, who's from Georgia, is someone who I'd keep a close eye on, someone the staff is really excited about. And it's just going to be who emerges in that group. It's going to be exciting to watch.
All right. You mentioned Kevin Concepcion. I'd refer to him there. I mentioned him last week. I said in the ACC or SEC, he might be like the best Percy Harvin sort of player, like where you really don't mind him carrying the football at all, and he's your best receiving threat. So he was a three-star kid out of Charlotte who NC State was happy to get, but there was no advance billing that this is what it's going to be. All right, look into Ethan McDowell's crystal ball. Give me a kid in this year's recruiting class that maybe not at the Concepcion level, but a guy that was probably, quote, under-recruited.
Under-recruited. All right, let me see here. I'll give you we'll talk about Christian Zachary. He's a receiver from South Carolina. I don't know how the depth chart's really going to work out at outside receiver because they're bringing in so many new guys. But he's someone that he was committed to UVA, and after he committed to UVA, a couple days later, he visited NC State, picked up the offer, and ended up flipping to the Wolfpack. He's from South Carolina, from St. Matthews, went to Calhoun County High, and is a really, really good player. His Shrine Bowl selection up here, and ended up, he's the On3 had him as the 151st receiver in the country. It's like a mid 3-star kid. But I'll tell you what, he came in as an early enrollee and put on nearly 20 pounds of muscle, according to, I talked to the strength folks over at NC State, and he's making a really good impression. I think he's someone that if he's not contributing this year, is going to surprise a lot of people with how much he contributes in his Wolfpack career.
Okay, I'm going to let you run. If I could give 30 seconds. By the way, you don't work for NC State, so you don't have to defend this, but just give me your opinion here. I'm looking at the home slate. I'm not even talking about wins and losses. Western Carolina, Louisiana Tech, Northern Illinois, Wake Forest, Syracuse, Stanford, and Duke. PU. How do you get people to buy those tickets?
Oh, well, yeah, that's not my job ticket-wise. But you know how they buy tickets is put together an exciting product on the field and you go in week two into Charlotte and beat Tennessee, right? That'll generate enough excitement right there to get folks in the seats. And I think it's just going to be a fun team to watch because of how explosive that offense could be. And, hey, if those teams end up not being good and ends up being a weak home schedule, that should lead to quite a few wins, which I don't think NC State fans will be very upset about.
Yeah, I don't know. Do y'all have the mascot that does push-ups after every point, or is that not a thing? Like, because so you got a coyote in the end zone doing push-ups. Yeah, he's going to be busy with that home schedule, man. It could be a fun, rollicking time in Carter-Finley. I appreciate you coming on today, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Ethan McDowell on three. So if that's what it is, like I said, he doesn't work there. But I'm like, how do you really go to people? What you do is you talk about the big picture. Western Carolina, Louisiana, they do have Tennessee. That's a home game at Charlotte. But it's their neutral site, and they'll get paid for it. But as far as on campus, and Carter-Finley is a fun place to be. I've said it's one of the most – it's not a huge – I'm going to guess here. I'm going to get this wrong. 63,000? I don't know, David. Like, no. And it's a visually – it's a fun place. Got the big waterfall thing out front with all the wolves on it. It's a fun-looking place there, and it's in a good environment for a big game. Western Carolina's not a big game. It's a home game against a team where the fan base has a lot of legitimate expectations. Beat Tennessee and Charlotte. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen. How much is it?
Carter-Finley Stadium holds 56,000 people.
56,000 people. I overshot by 7,000. 56,000. All right. Well, the 56,000 are there. They have had some Thursday nights. They've had some Saturdays. They've had some great times there. They won't have that necessarily against Louisiana Tech on September 14th. I don't expect it will be different on September 28th against Northern Illinois. Wake Forest this year, that's a crater team to me. There are some profile of Power 5 programs that I'm looking around in great fault, I would guess. I'm trying to pick the right word there, of name, image, likeness. They're about to crater. you're about to see an out of nowhere, how he's been so consistent, bowl game seven straight years, and then you get like a two-win season. Like Wake Forest is the profile of a program you could see that happen to this year. Syracuse the next week at home. Again, this is going to be – it sets up by just looking at the home slate. A lot of fun games on campus where you're putting up points. And the guy in the end zone, when they score seven, boom, seven push-ups. Score another touchdown, he doesn't do seven more, he does 14. Score the third touchdown, he doesn't do a seven additional seven, he does 21. So that's what we're looking at. Syracuse, Stanford, Duke. Yeah. Road trips are fun. Clemson, North Carolina. Get to go to downtown Atlanta, play Georgia Tech, and if you want, you can go out to Cal Berkeley. So that's what life in the ACC is now. All right, we break. We continue next.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
We're talking college football. Appreciate all of our guests joining us on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Today we've talked with Ben Jones from statecollege.com, covering the Nittany Lions, and James Franklin. He's supposed to go to the playoffs this year, folks. Also, Ethan McDowell from the Wolfpackers and On Three thing. We're going to be joining in about 10 minutes. Jake Rowe, Dogs HQ. Jake Rowe is going to join us. Catch up on Kirby and them in Athens. Brian Kelly and them in Baton Rouge, I'd mentioned a couple of weeks back, and it's just an anecdotal thing, and it goes even beyond just that, but I'm about to give you another point on that. But it's a nice, fun thing, and if you get 16- and 17-year-olds influenced in a certain way, then maybe just the thought, the image, the reinforcement of something online even can affect their college decision. I am talking about getting on a roll recruiting-wise. And that was LSU, and I pointed out two or three weeks ago. They were hosting a kid that was one of the, maybe the number one guard in America, I'm trying to remember. Kid out of Mobile. He's a four-star. He's a high four-star. And so they already had the number one quarterback for the 25 class, all high school kids I'm talking. The number one quarterback for next year, the number one running back, and the number one wide receiver, and the number one defensive lineman, and so all of this stuff. Well, five-star wide receiver. I just got a recruiting, I don't know, update? I think. I don't know. Five-star wide receiver, DeCorian Moore. Been committed to LSU since last summer. Told 247 that he's narrowed his focus to four schools, LSU, Texas, Oregon, and Ohio State. All right, I'm going to go back and start this again. Five-star wide receiver, DeCorian Moore, who has been committed to LSU for 8 months, says he has now whittled his list down to four. Now, the Tigers are one of the four, but there's three others as well. He was part of the big LSU junior thing this past weekend, and he is heading to check out Ohio State this coming weekend. Believe me, everything they have going on from Ryan Day back to Urban Meyer and even before that, your wide receiver, head to Columbus. It's a great, great landing spot. Baton Rouge isn't bad either. And while I'm not pimping for either locale, because I can't tell you what the quarterback position is going to look like at either place in 2025. I don't know. Garrett Nussmeier, here's a scenario. He's a returning starter, and people looking around talking like he's a dark horse for a Heisman finalist. That could happen. Or, hey, it didn't work out, and he's in the portal, and, oh, he didn't get any nibbles, or he's going to wind up at Syracuse. I have no idea what quarterback. Will Howard? I don't know. Julian Sain thinks he's going to be the quarterback next year, right? Thanks. Who knows? There is a stud somewhere in America that we know that, like, it's March. Who's going to be the quarterback throwing to Corey and Moore a year from now? Year and a half? Fall of 25? Folks, there is a starter or almost starter somewhere in Power 5 right now who could be the starter at Ohio State. Last year, Will Howard was like, can't wait to get back Kansas State. One final season, light it up. And he's like, yeah, one more final season. And it's going to be for somebody else. So there's, like, Justin Fields, that happened. Hi, I'm playing at Georgia. No, I'm playing at Ohio State now. So the reason I bring all those up, all of those, is because the folly of trying to look at a depth chart in March of 24 to think what the position could be like to affect Corian Moore in September of 25. A year and a half out, I would have looked at Ohio State and said, well, clearly, when who was it? Might have been Haskins. When Haskins leaves, it will be Tate Martell. I didn't know how great Dwayne Haskins would be in his one season. I certainly didn't know that Tate Martell and Justin Fields and all that would play out. I thought Justin Fields may beat out Jake Fromm. So, total folly. But he's going to Ohio State this weekend. That's a great place to go. I mean, you assume. So, what you have to do, even more so, and I've talked about this always in the era of recruiting, but even more so when it's portal, when there is such roster upheaval where it's normal for we have 43 new players coming in. That's not so unusual. What about the coaching staffs you trust? What about the play callers? What about the coordinators you trust? I trust everything at Ohio State with Ryan Day and those receivers, and as far as I know, Hartline. So it's still there. That's all you can do is project. So I know that, and I know that when I look at, like, Chip Kelly, this may be what he wants to do from now on. I don't think for all the assistants, every single assistant on that LSU staff, I don't think any of them, this is the end of the rainbow. I think everyone looks at it and says, I want to be a real, real coordinator where it's just me, or I want to go from a position coach to being a coordinator. One guy's like, I just went from Tulane to LSU. I want to go from LSU to the New York Giants. Like, they're all jumping on looking for something more. I don't know that that's really what's going on with Chip Kelly. And Ryan Day, same sort of thing. This may be home. So DeCorian Moore, you bet on the staffs and their track records best you can. But the kid who is committed to LSU is now taking his visit to Ohio State. And that's just reality. And I guess Texas and Oregon are going to get worked in as well. And those are fine places to visit, too. But when you're talking about just bouncing around and looking from one program to the next, not just for this fall, like I'm in the transfer portal and it's April 27th, that's way more predictable as a recruit for a year and a half from now. Dice roll stuff.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Talking about the future Georgia schedule earlier in the program. And make no mistake, I mean, it is a much bigger trend. And there's a reason for it. Part of it actually will benefit the fans. And this is not anything that really happens a lot. But you look at the fans right now in college football, they've been assaulted. College football fans, and in particular their wallets, they have been just under siege. It has never been necessarily a cheap venture to go to a college football game, especially as a donor and then the season ticket holder. And that's kind of like you got to buy your way in. You got to make the donation, and then you got to buy the tickets. And that has never necessarily been an easy thing. Now fans are also financing the payroll. And so fans are under assault, man. One thing that is in their favor is at least the, and I don't want to say trend, most of the top programs, a lot of these week one neutral site paycheck games, they're coming back to campus. And I'd mentioned Georgia way down the road in 2030. They've got a home schedule setting up Clemson, Ohio State, and Georgia Tech on the same home slate. That's not nothing. Got a lot to talk about. Want to welcome on right now, good friend of the program. From On Three, Dogs HQ, it's Jake Rowe. Jake, welcome back, friend. How you been?
Look, I appreciate it, dude.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on today, Jake. I was talking about future scheduling for Georgia, and just talk about, in particular, Georgia fans, because with a week one neutral site game, with the SEC championship game several years, with one or two playoff games, I mean, the Georgia fans Amex has been under assault, it seems, since that Rose Bowl game so many years ago. Just talk about now most of these games coming back to campus. Talk about the financial experience for a Georgia fan, but then also a lot of these games returning to campus now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing, and I think they're really going to get paid off in the 2025 season. They've got a lot of big games on the road this coming year. Talk about the Amex getting tested. I was looking at flights to Austin and in San Antonio the other day, and those are brutal. Hotel rooms are brutal. So that's going to, you know, for those that want to slip out there with that Formula One race going on that weekend, it's going to be pretty wild. But, it's the home schedule is not great this year, but it's going to get better. And I think the SEC is not necessarily going to have to, but I think Georgia's in line to get a real good pat on the back come 2025 when it comes to that home scheduling, getting some of those marquee games at home.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, I was talking about context earlier in the show, and context based around Georgia has lost one on-campus game since 2017. Normally, we're explaining the other way, like, oh, well, we had to play Bama, and then we had a field goal hit, like all the reasons that we lose home games. Talk about the environment inside Sanford Stadium, and I'm going to, like, be candid about this if you could, because I've gone to Georgia home games for 40-plus years. It has only recently become, I mean, a terror of a place for the visiting team. Talk about the environment around there and based around just not losing games at home anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the environment has, as the team has been ultra-competitive and done some things, the environment has absolutely gotten, you know, tremendous. I mean, I think back to that Tennessee game, you know, just a couple years ago, and you know, you knew driving into that game, there was rain in the forecast, but that place was ready to go. And I think that kind of came through when you saw you go to Ole Miss this past year, Kentucky this past year. Neither one of them lived up to that Tennessee game. Georgia has done a good job, you know, kind of fostering a better environment there. I don't want to say it started then. I mean, the Notre Dame game was something pretty incredible as well. But they've done a really good job with the game day experience just in general, and I'm sure that's helped. And Georgia fans have shown that, you know, put a big game between the hedges, and they'll fire you up for it. It's also kind of Kirby Smart's got his own little, Lieutenant Gordon bat signal there. If he pops up in that Monday press conference to start asking for stuff, they usually give it to him.
Oh, I've used this phrase, Jake. He has weaponized the Georgia fan base. Like, he knows I've got a button and I can push it ever so often. And I mentioned, like, the blackout game versus Auburn. There was an LSU game at home. Like, Georgia fans could point to some specific Saturdays. I'm like, no, Ole Miss game, it sucked to be the opponent. Kentucky game, it sucked to be the opponent. I mean, it's just what it is now. All right, let's talk on field. Pierce Spurlin, number maybe two or three ranked tight end a year ago, and he's got a medical retirement. Talk about the position if you want to and what it does to the depth chart, but also about what's it say about the recruiting job Georgia's done, that losing a talent like that, it just appears out of nowhere that you're going to have this, and it doesn't really seem it's going to damage the depth chart much.
No, first of all, I mean, you know, and I know you know that, you know, you're in the same boat here. It's just so heartbreaking for a kid because you know how much sacrifice and hard work was put into getting to that point. And Pierce is a double, you know, double Georgia legacy. Both parents, I believe, went to Georgia, that very tied to the program. Georgia obviously got Oscar Delp coming back. Lawson Lucky was probably ahead of Pierce on the depth chart. And then they went out to the transfer portal and got Ben Jurasik from Stanford, who I think is a massive, massive addition, whether Pierce Sperling was going to be able to play or not, because Jurostek is a guy that if you go back and you look at his 2021 season, the last season he was really fully healthy, kind of extrapolate what he did over the course of 15 games, it's over 900 yards. He had over 600 yards receiving that year. That season would have been the best season in Georgia history for a tight end not named Brock Bowers. He's a really big-time talent. I mean, and in a way, you know, I don't know. I think he's got a long way to go kind of to be a complete tight end and be a blocker. But he's a guy that they gave in the rounds to. They threw the ball to him quickly. They yep. wanted to see him with the ball in his hands, and he's not Brock Bowers. I don't know when we'll see another, but he does some of the things that Bowers did that made Georgia so hard to defend. And then, you know, behind him, you know, Jaden Riddell is a guy that they grabbed in this 2024 class he's a big kid, 6'4", 6'5". He's posted some GPS numbers during workouts that have him near the top of the board there, over 20 miles per hour reaching on his GPS stuff. And then a guy that I don't think he'll be making a difference this year, but I do believe is kind of more of a diamond in the rough type guy. They went and got Colton Heinrich out of Florida. And I watched this kid during a throw-in session, you know, that throw-in session heard around the world at Jefferson High School with Dylan Raiola. You know, organizing it. I watched that kid out there catch passes and do some things, and he looked impressive too. So they've done a really good job recruiting that room, and they've got kind of another, you know, Megatron-looking character coming in the 2025 class in Ellis Williams from Camden County, 6 foot, 6'7", 6'8", 240 pounds that they're excited about as well.
That's not normal in a 16-year-old. All right. Kirby has said, and it's only spring and they're Georgia. So I'm going to say, I'll say that. It's only spring and they're Georgia. Kirby said, yeah, this guy banged up. This guy limited. This guy banged up. This guy limited. Is it because it's spring and they're Georgia that there's going to be, I mean, not everybody on scholarship is going to be practicing, are they?
I think that's about right. For some guys, you know, Malachi Starks had a very minor, from what I'm told, shoulder procedure this offseason. He's going to be limited this spring. That's not necessarily a bad thing, Chuck, because Georgia's trying to find a safety to play opposite him. And with those two spots being pretty interchangeable, that opens a lot of reps, you know, a lot of full padded first team reps for, you know, probably 40 to 50 of practice for the likes of Dan Jackson, Jake Pope, David Daniel Sisvon, Justin Rett, KJ Bolden. So there's a lot of reps to go around for those guys. And you know, I think Georgia can benefit from that. Now, with that said, there are some guys that they would love to have. Tyrion Ingram Dawkins is one. Mykel Williams is going to move to kind of more of an edge, Jack linebacker type role, rushing a thrush from a 2-point stance type deal. And that puts Tyrion Ingram Dawkins' hand in the ground at defensive end. Well, he's out this spring because the foot injury he battled all of last season required surgery, and he's gonna miss this spring and be ready to go for camp. Kristen Miller's another one who I thought had a pretty good season last year and really came on, especially at the end of the year. He's going to be limited this spring with a meniscus injury that he sustained right before the bowl game. So some of these are, you know, bummers a little bit. Some of them sting, I think you're on to something there with some of these guys. If this was the football season, I think some of them would probably be giving it a little bit more of a go.
Last question for you, and you mentioned a name there, and I want to tell you the universal response. You said Dan Jackson. Everybody's like, oh, Dan Jackson. The translation is, yeah, he's still with the program. I remember him. He's played some. What is the idea? Because I love upperclassmen defensive backs.
Yeah, I mean, so Dan Jackson played a lot in that 2021 season.
Yep.
And you know, at that time, I think he kind of got introduced to the world that season, basically. I mean, I remember Dan Lanning talking about him in the preseason. I was like, he's not going to play. He's a walk-on. This is Georgie. He's not going to play. And then, lo and behold, he's the third safety. I mean, he's coming in a dime package. Chris Smith gets hurt. He's playing safety. So that season didn't bring a big playmaking element. You know, kind of needed to get better. It struggled at times, but you know, at times kind of showed you some flashes that like he's got some ability. Well, he comes back the next season. He's playing early in the year. Malachi Starks ends up beating him out for the starting job, but he picks off a pass against South Carolina. and then he suffers a broken foot, and then he ended up dinged up most of last season. And hey, Georgia had Malachi Starks and the depth chart, right? Javon Bullard. But now here's the way I think about Dan Jackson, Chuck. I think about it as kind of like, all right, well, Georgia's looking for its guys at safety, and they've got KJ Bolden and they've got Justin Rhett as young guys. Maybe they'll be ready to play. Maybe they won't. But he gives you a floor that you feel like can play winning football and can get the job done. He might not be the best guy in that room by the end of the year, but he does provide you with a high floor. And honestly, I would love to see what the guy could do, even as a walk-on, if he could just stay healthy and kind of work through it all. Because you've seen some playmaking flashes out of him, and there's nobody on the roster at this point, after all the ball that he's played and as long as he's been around, that knows the defense any better.
And I'm having flashbacks, and this is not the exact same thing, but you remember when Kirby came to Athens, one of the first things he did was like, I need somebody who speaks the language. He wanted Mo Smith to come over and play that sort of runaround hybrid all over the field guy. And there were some, I think it was against Auburn. Didn't he open the second half with like a pick?
Only touchdown Georgia scored in that game.
I was like, folks, that's because Mo, I've seen this 500 times, and I was like, there's something about an upperclassman, especially a safety with Kirby. So who knows? Maybe Dan Jackson will get some more stars or bones on his helmet. Brother, I appreciate the input, man. Thank you.
You got it, dude.
Jake Rowe, Dogs HQ. It's on three. So Georgia back in the day, they had about the best back of the helmet reward in the SEC, and not everybody in the SEC had it, but Vince Dooley, you had stars, and you had to start near the red helmet and then just singular white stripe down the middle. You had to start with white stars. You had to start right there at the base in the corner where the stripe met the base of the helmet, and you had to form a half circle on each side working your way up. Just fantastic. And I don't know why he did it that way. He also, Vince Dooley, one of the favorite things I liked about, just, again, a little quirk, he would have on kickoffs, he would have the 11th player facing backwards towards the kicker. Give him the countdown and Kevin Butler go running past, and then he would actually function many times as the safety. So there are quirks that coaches do. There was no real reason, I don't think, at first. You know, Tom Landry with the offensive line hiccup. And you just do that, and it just becomes sort of a personality. But I'm wondering if Kirby and safety and Dan Jackson, and I don't know, are they giving stars or bones now? Whatever it is they give. He has an opportunity to get a few more this year, because an upperclassman in the secondary, there's just stuff that you see that before the ball snap, you're like, okay, I know what is about to end. Boy, it just happened. It just happened, and that was Mo Smith. And I forgot, he took it back for a touchdown. That's right. Mo Smith having the game-winning touchdown return against Auburn in that game. Like, that's not really the profile, I don't think. That's not really – I think that's, you know, more of a ball hawk sort of corner, long arms, first-round pick sort of thing. It happened because of his experience. So, all right, we're going to take a break. We'll wrap up on this Wednesday next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
All the things that I believed in for all these years, 50 years of coaching, no longer exist in college athletics. So it's always was about developing players. It was always about helping people be more successful in life.
That's Nick Saban. And for what it's worth, he believes all that, and it was always real with him. Now, winning was also real, and national championships and doing things at the absolute highest level. And if there was a rule, then he would make full use of it. Now, this was way, way, way before anybody else was doing it. But now, again, I've said perspective. Like, Blake Barnett, quote, did something to Bama or Bama fans or Nick Saban or whatever, that he found something in the rule book and he was like, oh, I'm going to do that. Oh, schemer, loophole. I talked about that earlier this week. And now we look at it, and I'm expecting Ty Simpson after spring. Like, I think, my opinion, don't know this, is he's using Alabama in the spring as his final platform, and he's going to duke it out and lose the job or not take it, and then he's going to transfer after spring. And well, he's doing the same thing. It's just a few years later. We have a totally different perspective about it. Nick Saban, there was, I want to say, after maybe his fourth season or so at Alabama. I asked him about this in media days. He didn't like it very much, but well, whatever. He addressed it, that he had been at Alabama, it might have been 3 or 4 years. And at that point, the ability to run a kid off, which was not what he did in every case, but to, what was it, roster management, to process a kid out of the program, there was this medical hardship where you would stay on scholarship, get to take classes for free if you chose to stay. But we found an injury, and because of this injury, you're not able to perform well. And so we're going to take the hit. We'll still fund your scholarship, but because we've declared you have a medical hardship, you cannot play football here anymore. Stay on scholarship, but we get another scholarship for somebody else. After his first few seasons at Alabama, Alabama had, I think it was 11 players that had gone through this medical hardship, this medical red shirt situation, and the rest of the conference combined maybe had 12. It's like, so you're 10 times more likely to have this type of injury, can't play anymore, at Alabama than you are anywhere else in the conference. And that was just an avenue to process the roster. So when he talked about the flip side of that, though, he was always truthful. But give the kids an opportunity to create value. Well, there's a lot of value that is being insisted upon, whether it's being created or not. And there are a lot of places who, on spec, will buy that perceived value. I was at Alabama for a year or two or three, and I never really cashed in. I never really produced. But the perception that we're getting a corner who played at Bama, we're getting a wide receiver who played at Bama, we're getting a former Bama running back, we're getting that guy, that's a big deal to some folks. And honestly, if Nick Saban gave you a scholarship, well, you pass muster. Now, I don't know what type of, like, he looked at some of those receivers from like 2 and 3 classes ago and was like, all right, the lot of you, I'm gone, whatever. Maybe filter out 1 or 2 of you, rest of you, you transfer. Like, he got it apparently, quote, wrong. But just the quality of the athlete, the player potentially, the skill set, the run, jump, time, leap, all that. Yeah, a lot of kids started looking around going, I demand right now. And Nick Saban's like, no, that's not what we're doing here. Their philosophy in name, image, likeness was similar to Georgia. We're going to spread it around, and everybody's going to get some, but it's going to be for our current players. We're not buying high school kids. In the 12-team era, and you've got to say that, in the 12-team era, I don't know what approach is going to have more long-term sustainability. I know if you're already Georgia, you can say, hey, we're going to spread it around, and then you go make your own deals after that, but we're going to spread it around. I know if you're Texas and have, what, $13 million last season, well, everybody can get paid at that level. So, like, there are a couple of different approaches, and at Alabama, it was get into the program and create some value, and then I promise you, our players will get more than anybody else in the nation. And for a lot of cases, it turned out guys who emerged, they got their value. They got paid. It's not the environment. That's what Nick Saban is saying. It's about right now before I insist, and I haven't achieved yet, but I'm gonna, so go ahead and do this. And just not for him. Not for a lot of coaches, but when you're 39 and you're a wide receivers coach and you've only been in the ACC 2 years, okay, financially, no, you're hoping you stay on staff. You're hoping you get to do this just because, honestly, you need the money. if you're Nick Saban, you can look around and go, all right, 7 natties enough for me. I'll take the cash and I'll go work on TV and I'll do 2 days a week instead of 8. Wraps it up on a Wednesday. Appreciate all y'all coming here for your college football conversation. Appreciate everybody joining us on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Ben Jones, statecollege.com. From On Three, we had Ethan McDowell talking NC State. Good friend Jake Rowe talked George from Dogs HQ. Give us 22 hours. We will recharge the batteries. Me and Heath and Dave will be everybody back tomorrow talking college football right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.